Welcome. You're listening to episode 61 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. My name's David Maguire. Yes, I'm afraid I'm back. Sorry about that. I am creative director at Radix Communications. I'm here with our founder and lead copywriter, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello. Welcome back, David.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. And because he did such a super job last month, we are joined by Radix copywriter, real life black belt, and all round nice guy, super sub, George Reith.
Well, thanks for having me back, everyone. Good to be back.
I think there'd be a public outcry if you weren't.
Is that right?
Oh, you have a big fan club on Twitter now.
Perfect.
So George is here to talk us through his essential copywriting buyer's guide that he recently put together on our blog. It's the must-haves, the nice-to-haves, the sheer indulgences that make his job as a copywriter that bit easier. The copywriters on Twitter have also been telling us their best ever work-related purchase, and we have a whole load of correspondence on that. And later, the elusive man of mystery, Kieran Haynes, makes his nomination for the Radix B2B Content Hall of Fame. It is a packed show, but there is always room for you. So if you have any questions or comments about this episode, or if you'd like to tell us about your own best copywriting purchase, please do email us via podcast at radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. So, George, you put together your own copywriting buyer's guide and you asked our colleagues for input as well. Was there a lot of consensus or did anything surprise you about what they said?
Well, I think in terms of consensus, the only thing that was across the board was people's ability to ignore my email requesting comments about what they buy. But in a serious answer to your question, something I have noticed just talking with the guys in the office here and there about, you know, weird bits and bobs they've picked up that they, you know, use in their working days. I think the interesting thing is that for a lot of people, you know, it's just stuff they don't really think about. You know, they kind of, they have their computer that they work at, and that's fine. That's it. That does everything for them, right? And I think it's interesting that, you know, I guess people just don't realize that there's a world of incredibly, like, you know, high quality artisan keyboards, say, that you could get, right? And I have a lot to say about this, so I know I'm going to go into it.
I'm feeling you're trailing.
I think it's, you know, people don't always think about these things because, you know, your keyboard on your laptop's fine and that's great. But, you know, if you're a professional writer and you're spending 8-10 hours a day or whatever typing, you know, why wouldn't you want a nice keyboard, right? Like, that's my view on it, at least.
I mean, you're saying sort of about professional writers, I mean, but we do have a lot of listeners to this podcast who are B2B marketers rather than being full-time copywriters per se. Are the recommendations you're making in this list just for people who spend their whole day writing? Or are they sort of maybe could make a marketer's life easy too that could also...
That's a very good question. And I'd say, I mean, obviously, there's a spread of things I've written about here. So I think we've got 8 general sort of technology or, you know, object areas that I've mentioned about and sort of what you should look out for when purchasing things in them. And I think some of them are going to be writing-centric. Like, you know, if you're a full-time marketer, maybe you don't necessarily want to throw 100 quid at like a really fancy all bells and whistles keyboard. But a lot of the other stuff, like, you know, how to select a word processor, what to look for when shopping for a computer, you know, it's going to be relevant for anybody that works in an office environment, really. So there's a mix.
Good to know. And of course, if you are listening as a marketer in a big organization, you need to build a business case for any of these items, just point your purchasing team in the direction of this podcast and tell them we said so. It definitely works every time.
Should be good enough, yeah.
Absolutely. 100% of the time. So George, what have you got for us first?
Cool. So I guess what to tackle this in, really? I suppose we should start from the ground up and go for talking about, you know, your computer and how you purchase that and what to look out for. You know, I know probably most people who are working must have a computer already. Otherwise, how do you do your job? But if you're looking for a new one or, you know, a purchase is coming up on the horizon, there are some things to look out for that. And I think it's an important thing to get right because, you know, you will use it all the time. So if you have a real duff one, then it's going to be quite painful for you.
So, I mean, we do have some Twitter correspondence on this. When we asked people about their best ever copywriting purchase, there were a couple of responses, and a theme emerged. Tom Albrighton, hi Tom, said MacBook Air. turned daughter's clubs into productive time and paid for itself, plus easy to change venues and get new ideas, while Matt Phil Carver said MacBook, hands down, it loads fast, runs smooth as silk, and doesn't crash. And they last bloody ages. My parents no longer buy new laptops, they just wait for me to upgrade, so they inherit my three-year-old good as new ones. Now, I can see the temple... see your temples pulsing.
I wonder if you can hear the anger coming through down the microphone. No, I mean, I will try and be as fair about my comments here as possible, though I will freely admit I'm very much not a Mac person. So, please excuse any vitriol that spews out of me. I think regardless of whether you like Windows, Mac, or if you're one of those really cool kids that swears by Linux, what have you, I think the key is finding something that is reliable. And for most people as well, portability is a big one, which again is, I imagine, why there's a lot of love for the MacBook Air, because it's pretty easy to take around and it's light and small, right? And I think, that's the case whether you're a copywriter or a marketer. I think, a lot of people now, you're going to meetings, you're going to conferences, you're going all about, so you need something that you can take with you and you want to make sure that it works when you get there, right? So I can see why there's a lot of love for Macs, because they do have reliability as kind of their big modus operandi, don't they? It just works out of the box, and that's all good. I'm trying to be really nice about it. I'm just sounding very sarcastic, I imagine. I promise you that's not the case. Personally, I think you get more bang for your buck with a Windows machine, but that's kind of with the caveat of if you know what to look out for, because I think, they come in a lot of different configurations, and it's really easy to kind of make a wrong choice that suddenly means you have a pretty good computer aside from the hard drive that keeps failing or is really slow or whatever. There can be like the odd component that's just a bit duff if you're not quite sure what to look out for. So I guess in doubt, just go with your gut. But yeah, reliability and portability is the big factor, I think.
Is this something that you spend a lot of time thinking about, Fiona, when we're considering purchases for the team at Radix?
I try not to think about Mac versus PC too much, because I kind of share George's view of the world of Macs, but let's not get into that conversation. But I think, as George mentioned, Tom Albrighton there had a really good point about portability and about a light machine, because I think in the earlier days of Radix, let's buy the most expensive Dell laptop there is. And the most expensive Dell laptop there was this massive, great, heavy thing at that time. And trying to sort of lug that to client meetings or get it out on the train and do some work on the train was absolutely impossible. So, yes, we kind of learned our lesson in terms of getting sort of smaller, lighter machines for portability, definitely.
I think one final word I would say about computers as well, and again, I covered this off in the blog a little bit, but I think if you can find your way to getting a solid state drive in any machine you pick up, they do quite a lot of work. We've recently started upgrading all our hard drives at the Radix office to have solid states, and yeah, they're pretty good. I believe the hype on those. So if you can find your way to getting one of those installed, then that's pretty good.
Good to know. So what's up next? A choice of word processing software. There's only one choice, isn't there?
Kind of, yeah.
And choice is not.
It's one of these things where, I really... any area like this, I really hate to say that somebody has a monopoly, because there are options out there that aren't Microsoft Word, right? I mean, you can go with like loads of open source options and stuff, but realistically,
I mean, when I used to have my own agency, I tried to run that on LibreOffice, and it was a nightmare.
I used LibreOffice for a while.
There were just little bits where it just wouldn't work with clients.
The real problem just becomes in odd formatting issues, and it's fine sometimes, but if you're working with clients a lot who are all using Microsoft Word, and particularly if you're sending track changes back and forth, that's where it really goes pear-shaped, and it does not look great. So, obviously with Microsoft Office now, it can be really not cheap to acquire, but, you don't have to buy the upfront license even anymore. You can get the whole Office 365 thing and pay per month. Like, there's loads of options around it. If you're working on Word documents in a professional capacity, I don't really think there's an excuse anymore not to use Office, which. I'm not saying everybody needs to go under the Microsoft banner forever and ever and swear brand fealty, but when it comes to word processing software, yeah, you kind of got the only option, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting things that came up off Twitter was people that use other writing tools, which then may be exported into Word. So Laura Sutton, hi Laura, said, I mean, the first, she gave three best purchases, but her first one was Air Story, which is clean, simple, and allows me to export to HTML, Google Docs, Word, etc. Always improving. And she also enjoyed a copy hackers course and her best other best purchases, drinks at Copywriters Unite events to get to meet fellow writers. Similarly, Dave Chong, hi Dave, said probably writer duet. It's officially well useful, capital W, capital U, when I've got to do script things. Plus, it's the only script software I've found where the interface wasn't made by someone who's only had the concept of interfaces described to them over a broken walkie-talkie.
Very animated description there. I'm liking that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously in this blog, it was very much kind of my experience of things. I'm sure there's tons of really useful tools out there that I haven't had experience with that might actually be super useful. So, you know, hey, keep this conversation going on Twitter. That's great. These are all really interesting things. I'll have to check out some of these at some point, actually. Maybe I can update the blog another time.
Yeah, I don't know anything about AirStory, but I think there are various other sort of options for sort of drafting things outside of word processing, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've looked at before, and I kind of have a feeling that, great as Word is, and I'm a massive Microsoft fan, and I don't mind saying that, but it is based on the kind of A4 page, and if you're writing for something that is not going on an A4 page, or if you're writing like really kind of long form piece where you might want to kind of move chunks of it around, then Word isn't brilliant for that. And so I'm still on the lookout for something a little bit more flexible than Word, where you can kind of write copy in chunks and sort of move it about. And I think I had a look at Scrivener once for that kind of thing, but maybe that's something to pick up and look at again. I don't think anybody mentioned it on Twitter.
No, anyone mentioned Scrivener.
But if anybody has any recommendations for that kind of word processing software where it's more flexible than an A4 page, I'd be really interested.
Yeah, absolutely. Drop us an email or a tweet. While we're on the subject of software, Anna Gunning said that one of her best purchases was Grammarly Premium. It apparently gives more in-depth analysis than the standard version. Does things like finding overused words, passive voice, and repetition. Apparently, repetition is great for copy. Has been through lots of review and amends. Always interesting to hear a copywriter's view of Grammarly, I think.
Yeah, because I'm the kind of person that thinks, I don't need that. My grammar is perfect. My writing is perfect. But A, it's not. Yeah. And B, yes, I mean, I can see how it might work for something that's been through lots of different revisions and people have, you know, added bits to it, or, you know, you might have written the first draft ages ago but come back and written more of it more recently and you want something to look through the whole thing, then that could be really useful.
Yeah, that does sound like an interesting one to look into. I'm the same. I'm kind of going, I always sort of, I think, oh, yeah, that would be nice to get checked. And then sort of, you know, it's almost like a professional... I don't want my work checked by a computer.
I don't know. No. I think there's a lot of free just like web tools I found online where you can just paste in a section of your copy and it will give you things like, you know, readability scores and things like that. So there's loads of things like that. But I think it's interesting having like a sort of one-stop shop for all of that in the same place. I can imagine that would be quite useful. But again, I'm kind of the same way. I'm sort of thinking like, you know, whoa, I don't need that. Oh, it's, you know, it's probably not fine. But, you know, I have a certain professional pride about this, I'll admit.
And Matt from Writers Limited was saying that they use O-Transcribe all the time. Apparently really useful if you have an audio file you want to transcribe and don't want to keep switching between, say, iTunes and Word, for example. And best of all, it's free. So not technically a purchase, but apparently he would pay for it if he had to.
Nice. I'm going to keep that in mind next time we have to transcribe a video, because that is always quite a manually laborious task.
Yeah, that's a good one to have in the locker. Right, anyway, let's move on. What's next? More software?
More software, still in the same area, but less about specific word processing and more just general, you know, calendars, time management, various things like that, which, you know, I kind of think... Unsung Hero is probably a bit of a dramatic way of talking about it, but, you know, it's kind of like it's important, right? Like everybody kind of uses something like that to organise their day, but I think it's pretty easy just to use whatever's put in front of you and not really think about it. But I think it's really important, particularly if you work with other people a lot. It's pretty essential. You know, I don't really have a lot of thoughts around this because I've just used Outlook and it's fine. It gets the job done. But I definitely think there are some do's and don'ts. I know a lot of people are sort of saying in the Websphere when I was doing research for this, a lot of people saying that, you know, obviously it's really important that you have the ability to share calendars with people. So standard formats like ICS are very important to sort of be supported in your software of choice. Does anyone on Twitter have any thoughts and feelings about calendars?
No, they're surprisingly silent on the
unsung hero
on the subject. But we do a lot of work on our sort of calendars and time tracking, and we think a lot about that, don't we? Kind of gathering all the data and things.
Yeah, I guess, you know, because we're an agency, we're trying to manage the time of 10 writers, and so you need to be able to, or our account managers need to be able to look across all of those writers' calendars each day and move things about. And we found Outlook Calendar to be really surprisingly good for that, actually. I don't think Outlook Calendar is designed for half the uses that we put it to, but it works really well. It's got colour coding and everything, and so that works. And then in terms of timesheets, well, you know, anybody in an agency knows that timesheets are the bane of pretty much everyone's life. We use a project management software called Pro Workflow, which, to me, I've been in a lot of agencies, a lot of different ways of recording time, is one of the most effortless time recording pieces of software that I've ever come across. And it's got various options for how you record your time as well. So you can set a stopwatch going, or you can manually put it in, and I think there's another option as well. So Pro Workflow, really good for timesheets.
Stuff. So what's up next?
Cool. The next one is looking at storage and shared file storage, because again, it's one of these things, isn't it, where, you know, nobody wants to be halfway through a huge ebook and suddenly their hard drive crashes and they're caught out. But also, you know, the other end of the stick is, of course, sharing larger documents with clients and agencies. And obviously, you know, a lot of the email clients out there have pretty strict limits on attachment sizes. So having stuff like Dropbox or WeTransfer or another way of sending those large files and receiving them as well is important. And it's definitely something to think about. I think pretty much there are loads of options now, aren't there, for sort of free cloud storage. But even then, I think a lot of them, you know, whether it's Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever, paying for sort of the professional upgrade that gives you, like, you know, terabytes of storage actually works out fairly good value per month. Again, I haven't really looked hugely into the prices, but, you know, it's never seemed that astronomical or poor value to me. So, you know, I think that's definitely something to consider if you're doing a lot of writing.
Do you think GDPR has an impact there, or is it only if you're kind of processing
that's the thing. I mean, you know, unless there's some personally identifiable information in your white paper, in which case it's quite a strange white paper, but hey, you do you. as long as there's no personal information, it should be fine. But also, I mean, you know, you'd like to think that Dropbox and these other big companies are kind of looking into GDPR as well, and I don't know if they're going to change their processes to better reflect that legislation and how that's going to affect users, because I know there's like a split in the rules of GDPR depending on whether you're a data owner or a data controller. So, yeah, again, I'm not the expert on that regulation, so I couldn't possibly... I can't rule it out, so please consult a legal advisor and not me. But yeah.
The number of ebooks you've written on GDPR, right?
I should be the expert by now.
Set up a sideline,
there we go. This is my pivot into a new area of business.
Was that something that we kind of gave a great deal of thought to, Fiona, or did Dropbox just sort of fit for us?
In terms of file sharing, well, I personally didn't give it a lot of thought, but our IT consultant did, right. And we came up with Dropbox, and it's worked very well for us so far for file sharing internally, and then for file sharing with clients, I find WeTransfer just really useful
just so
for that.
Yeah, it's just so easy. Yeah, absolutely. Let's push on and talk about gadgets.
Aye, yeah. So yeah, the latter part of this blog I wrote was very much gadget heavy, and I definitely split these things out into what I would consider like the essentials and the sort of like nice to have, like the luxuries, if you can, which I haven't really done in this discussion so far. But one of the things that I think is actually pretty critical on the gadget front is a good audio recorder. And I think, you know, whether you're on the creative side, like us as copywriters, or whether you're on the sort of client services side, you know, people attend a lot of calls, and I think having an easy way to record those so you can listen back to them later rather than having to, you know, scrabble to take notes while interviewing someone or talking to a client or anything is really helpful. And I think a lot of people would probably just think, well, I'll just get an app on my phone that can do that. And I think that is definitely an option. But then, you know, having your phone in with you, you run the risk of like the battery dying, because let's be honest, smartphone batteries still aren't that great, are they? Or, you know, text coming through and distracting you. There's all sorts of things that can go wrong with that kind of approach. I personally just like having a dedicated recording device that I know, as long as I've got batteries in it, is going to work, it's going to save it, it's not going to distract me and sort of run out of battery halfway through or what have you in the same way. And you can get them pretty cheap now, these handheld recorders, like £50 or something like that will get you a fairly good one. So I think if you're on a lot of calls, that's kind of essential, really. That's my view. I don't know if you guys have any specific thoughts about that or...
No, I mean, I think the handheld recorder is really useful. I have used the voice recorder on my phone to good effect as well. Mm. So, but yes, things can happen. Yeah. Like, I went to a conference and I was trying to record the session and take photos of the slides. That didn't go well because every time I took a photo, the voice recorder stopped, so don't do that. There are things like WebEx now will record the call, which is great if you can then get it to work and play back, because that does need some special software that's not always easy to get hold of.
And, absolutely. Yeah. My one caveat to this whole thing we were just discussing is, of course, that if you are going to record a call, do let everybody on the call know that you're going to be recording them. There's a lot of sort of privacy rules and regulations around that, so don't get caught out. Let them know.
So your new legal hat on, yes.
I was going to say,
especially
I have to
in the UK.
Again,
so
I'm not a lawyer,
permission.
But it's just polite, isn't it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, make sure you do that.
There's not a lot of stuff about audio recording, but on the other side of audio, an awful lot of copywriters on Twitter are into like their headphones and stuff like that. So, so Chloe said very difficult call of the her top purchases, New Oxford Dictionary for writers and editors. I think that got a couple of mentions actually. Noise cancelling headphones, and also you'll like this one, Fiona. The fee to upgrade from my BlackBerry Pearl RIP to a properly clever phone.
Are you just suggesting that I'm old?
No, that you're a BlackBerry fan.
I was back in the day, yes. In fact, yeah, I do still miss my BlackBerry, because I think I've got small enough hands that the keyboard was all right for me.
I miss phones having proper keyboards on them. I thought that was cool.
I did like the BlackBerry.
Yeah.
I don't know, I always struggled with them, although I always struggle like sending emails from phones and things anyway. I'm pachydactylous, you see. Which is a word meaning fat fingers. I learned at the weekend. I just thought I'd rock that one out.
Nice.
And similarly, Kevin Mills said yes to the phone and the headphones. In fact, anything with phone in it. KTQ says, ooh, headphones are a necessity. And Lissa Faye Crump, hi Lissa, said for me, it's definitely a combination of headphones and a Spotify subscription. When I'm working in a noisy office, trying to concentrate on writing, I like to escape into an epic playlist. And it helps me get into the zone and not be distracted. Oh, I do like listening to a movie soundtrack.
Oh yeah, it does make everything feel really epic, doesn't it?
Suddenly, all your B2B copy is a matter of life and death.
I was going to say, it's all like the writing equivalent of like a helicopter crashing or something like that. You know? Not in a bad way. I mean, you know, just like epic explosions and bang.
You're saying that, David?
I was going to say that sounded like a real put down. Then I did not mean that way. Oh dear, put my foot in it again.
My copy's like a crashing helicopter.
Yeah, don't write that one down. The one thing I would say is I think if I had noise-cancelling headphones, you know, I'd miss the office banter. I mean, it helps that we're surrounded by very amusing people in Radix. Again, not in a put-down way, in a good way. Everybody here's really witty and funny. Oh,
don't know. Sometimes I need to just resort to the pink noise. Yeah. Just
is that what I'm talking?
Mostly to drown out Steve's jokes, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
So, crumbs, the time is going, so we need to get on quickly through these.
Mm.
So, is a second monitor really worth the money?
Yes. Absolutely.
Are we all agreed, Fiona?
I don't even have a first monitor.
You just work
just
with a
have my laptop.
You just work with a laptop.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I know.
I'm kind of going against the norm here. Lots of people say that second monitors are really useful.
I actually think it's kind of 50-50 in the Radix office, though. I know a lot of people have a second monitor, but then like just duplicate the screen across it. Like they don't actually use it as like, you know, two monitors extending the desktop, which I find very bizarre. But there we go.
It was the single most popular thing.
Nice.
Among our Twitter correspondents.
Our Twitter people have good taste.
Yeah,
good
Matt at Writers, Leif Kendall at Pro Copywriters. Hi, Leif. Helen Keevey, who has the brilliant Twitter handle Prickly Chicken, which may be my favourite Twitter handle ever. Anna Gunning and Kat at Kat Copy Creative Work, just all second monitor. Absolutely, just makes life so much easier.
It's really useful, particularly from a copywriting perspective, if you're working like with a brief and then also having to write into a thing, just having them both up at the same time without having to like alt tab like a maniac is a real bonus.
One thing I used to have was a thing that I stole an idea from programmers and devs. and web designers, where I got a monitor that would rotate by 90 degrees.
Yeah, vertical. And
I had it in portrait orientation because most of the things I was writing was that were that shape. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I'll do that. It'll be cool. What I hadn't realised is I'd bought a 27-inch widescreen monitor. So by the time I did that, nobody could see me. It was like having like a monolith from 2001 sitting on your desk.
Wrong way to hide away.
It was ridiculous. So now stay calm. Stay calm,
I'll try,
George.
I'll try. I cannot.
But tell me, in bearing in mind that we don't have that long left, about keyboards.
Keyboards, right. Okay, so here's my bottom line about it, right? So if you're using the laptop, the keyboard on your laptop, you're doing yourself a bit of a disservice, right? And the way I say it is, it's like the way you'd never see a chef using a dodgy pair of knives that are like as the value, right? They'll put money into having good tools. I think if you write a lot, you should probably look at getting a nice keyboard. I just don't know why you wouldn't want to do that for yourself.
So what defines a nice keyboard?
So my view is, mechanical keyboards are just really nice and lovely, and yeah, they're a little expensive, but you should look into them. I won't go into the full depth of what they entail and the different categories and Cherry MX keys and all that. You can look at the blog. I've written about it a bit there. A bit, he says. I've written extensively about it there. I do like a good keyboard, but they're coming down in price all the time, and I think they are really lovely and help you type faster and put less strain on your fingers, which is always good. You're going to do your sound test.
So I have my keyboard here, which is like this is a membrane keyboard, right?
That's right, that's a membrane keyboard. So that's the kind of standard one you'll get. And you know, they're fine, they do the job, but it basically means the entire... Sorry, I'll leave some space so we can actually hear your keyboard. So I don't know if you'll even hear the sounds properly through these mics, but the thing with the membrane is it's basically an entire switch spread across the whole keyboard, and sort of it just detects where the switch is being pressed to say, you know, whether you're typing the A key or a zero or whatever. Whereas a mechanical has a switch for every individual key, which gives it a lovely clicky sound. I'll pull this up here and show you.
Oh, can I feel the difference?
Yeah, go for it. So this is a brown switch keyboard.
A brown switch
keyboard. Which has a tactile bump in the middle, so you can kind of feel when the key has sort of registered without having to hit the bottom of the board.
So this is me enjoying your brown haptic bump.
If you want to word it like that, David, please do. Whatever, you do you.
It travels a long way, though.
The thing is, when you get used to it and you can feel the bump halfway, you don't have to travel the whole way. You can kind of just type really quickly and lightly, and it helps you kind of speed up a little bit. So it shouldn't be too loud. And that is the caveat with these keyboards that I will be upfront about, is that they can be a little noisy. So this one here, the one you were just typing on, David, is a slightly lighter switch. You can get heavier ones that do make a bit of a racket and they kind of sound like the modern equivalent of a typewriter. So if you do work in an office, I would recommend choosing carefully what kind of keyboard you go for, because people probably won't be too happy with you if it sounds like a construction zone over by your desk.
Are you a fan of an old school hipster keyboard, Fiona?
No, not at all. You see, I'm just not convinced. I never think about the keyboard.
Would you care to try?
I'll have a go, yes.
See, my view on it is that everybody should be a fan of mechanical keyboards. A lot of them just haven't tried them yet, you know?
No, I don't like it.
Oh, no. My theory has been disproven.
Well, you know, it sort of reminds me of the keyboards that we used to have in the old days, because probably it's the same type of keyboards we had in the old days. I don't know, I just feel like you should never go back.
That's fair enough.
But I'm prepared to admit that I'm probably wrong about that.
No, I don't think so at all. I think there's a halfway house where you can have a beautiful blend of old and new, you know.
Although, while we're talking about the subject of a weird obsession with an old-fashioned design classic, I think we should start the first of a semi-regular series. Fiona Talks About Chairs.
Fiona Talks About Chairs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not sure a podcast is the right medium to talk about, you know, beautiful pieces of design. I think they really need to be seen. Uh-huh. But yes, I suppose if you can ask me, you know, what has been my best purchase over the years, more than the kind of gadgets that I use and the software that I use for writing, it's got to be my surroundings and the things that I have around me. And yes, I think I'm sort of fairly well known at Radix for being quite into the furniture that we have around us and the chairs that we have in the office. And I do feel like, you know, it is one of the perks of running an agency that you kind of get to choose the furniture. And I think the day the first Herman Miller books arrived was a kind of sort of pivotal moment in Reddix when we got our nice desk chairs. So it's not just about the equipment that you use, but it's also about what you sit on. And I'm quite interested in that aspect of things that are nice for copywriters to have.
And it was of the chairs that we've got, if you had to choose one, would it be the Herman Miller or...
Oh, it's hard to choose.
You had to choose one chair.
I know, but one.
It's like trying to choose one of your children.
at the risk of sounding really shallow, the day our operations director, Sophie, who looks after the budget, went on maternity leave, and the day she went on maternity leave, I thought, in control of the money. I immediately went onto eBay and bought a set of 6 vintage Eames chairs for our meeting table, which I've never regretted. They're lovely. Although they arrived and I was carrying... Well, one of them down to the office, and Sophie happened to drive past and saw what I'd been spending Reddix's money on in her absence. And she kind of put her foot down since she got back from maternity. With good reason, I should think.
Fiona talks about chairs.
If you, the listener, have any comments or a purchase we've missed out that has absolutely changed your working life, then please do drop us a line on email or Twitter. Before we go, there's just about time to induct a second nominee to the Reddix B2B Content Hall of Fame. To recap, this isn't just about content we've written. In fact, not at all. It's just things we wish we'd written. So I caught up with our senior copywriter and content lead, international man of mystery, Kieran Haynes, to hear about his nomination. So, Kieran, you are nominating our second ever inductee into the Reddix B2B Content Hall of Fame. And it's a newsletter. Now, that's something that not a lot of people would view as maybe content as such. It's more a medium for delivering content. But CB Insights is a bit different, right?
I think, it is. It's also a newsletter that delivers content. But I don't see why you would draw that distinction. I mean, you're sending it out. It's to people who you want to engage with. It has to be. Written and involve curation the same way as all other bits of content. So yeah, I don't have a problem with defining a newsletter as content in that sense. And I think it's fair to say that, of the newsletters that I receive anyway, there is more writing that goes into the CB Insights newsletter than most. It's not just a collection of links, although it is that, but there's a voice and there is material holding it all together and framing it and making sure that, the most interesting points are being brought out for the target audience, I guess.
So what's different about the voice and the way that it's put together? How would you sort of summarise it or give us an example?
Well, I mean, I guess it is a voice that is confident in its audience, and I think a lot of that confidence comes from the fact that the company clearly does a lot of analysis into how the newsletter is performing, looking at open rates, looking at what people click on. And I think that voice also... in general, you would characterise it, I guess, as informal and personable and unafraid to have opinions. And all these things, make they're not unique in the world at doing that, but they do it with conviction. And the success of their newsletter is in part, I think, testament to how well that works if you get it right. If you can do that with a genuine, in a way that feels genuine to your audience.
And it seems like it's funny as well, right? I mean, there's stuff that you share with your colleagues there.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think as a company that's working in data analysis, they're in a fortunate position of being able to gather together humorous examples of where that goes wrong. And that is something that a terribly put together pie chart is something that will strike a chord with a lot of business people, almost regardless of what their job role is and where they work. So So yeah, they manage to share things that are, that exist within the universe that make sense to their audience. But, you know, and so it's kind of on message. It's kind of building up that rapport, but at the same time, you know, may not be necessarily directly useful to them. But still, yeah, still helps. It's still on message for their brand and for, you know, what their audience cares about. It just happens to be frivolous. You know? So yeah.
All for a bit of well-aimed frivolity. Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, thank you very much. That sounds absolutely fantastic. I know CB Insights has a huge following, and lots of people will be very pleased to hear me say I'm delighted to accept the nomination and induct CB Insights into the Radix B2B Content Hall of Fame.
Thanks, Kieran, and congratulations to CB Insights. Two inductions in, and our Hall of Fame is already getting a bit left field. But if there's anyone you as a listener would like to nominate, please do drop us an email or a tweet. And sadly, that is all we have time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. If you have any questions or comments about the episode, you're very welcome to email us at podcast@radix-communications.com. You can send us a boring standard email and words and things and type it if you like, or you can email us a voice memo from your phone and we will run around the office with glee. You can also find us on Twitter at radixcom, that's with one D, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our helpful, insightful and 100% non-spammy email updates. If you have any questions, tips or hints that you'd like us to consider in next month's podcast, please do get in touch. Until then, hasta la vista, baby.